5 years ago yesterday, Margaret Thatcher died. I celebrated this by putting up a video where she explained a few home truths to people back in the late 1970s. This was met by a furious response from a number of readers. One of them declared, "The vast majority of Britons know that Mrs. Thatcher was a disaster." Not sure there's any empirical evidence for that. After all, Mrs. Thatcher won 3 general elections. She was voted back in. It's a democracy. People liked her. There were a number of other bogus statistics wielded by the critics. I wonder how old those people are, because you see, I was only 11 when Mrs. Thatcher came to power. My memories of the 1970s are pretty scant. I remember a few things, but I had to read about them. To be able to remember the decade before Mrs. Thatcher came to power, I guess you have to be about 65. I suspect many of her critics weren't even born when the great woman came to power. For those younger listeners, just a recap on what Britain was like before Mrs. Thatcher came to power, before we get to the facts of what she achieved for this country. The 1970s, Britain was known as the sick man of Europe. Our economy was on its knees. The rot started under Ted Heath. He tried to take on the miners, they went on strike, and they nearly brought his government down. We had something called the 3-day week. Because of the miners being on strike, there wasn't enough power to keep the lights on. So for 2 days a week, we had to sit there in darkness. We had candles. Factories were forced to shut down. Why did he take on the miners? Because the miners were on strike. They had historically been underpaid for doing dangerous jobs. But by the early 70s, their pay was pretty full. Yet they wanted more, and they had the power to demand more. Things got worse in 1974 when the Labour Party came to power. By 1976, they had, as Mrs. Thatcher once said, done what all socialist governments do. Eventually, they ran out of other people's money. The country was bankrupt. We had to go to the IMF for a bailout loan. The Labour government struggled on, but by 1979, things were really going very, very badly indeed. We had what was called the winter of discontent. Rubbish lay in the streets, not being collected. Bodies lay unburied because the people who worked in cemeteries were on strike. Throughout the decade, Britain's labour relations were appalling. We had the highest strike rates in Europe. It made the country almost uninvestable. Why on earth would you set up a factory in Britain or open a new factory in Britain when you know that the workers were going to be on strike 3 times as much as their counterparts in Germany, France, America, etc.? It was a recipe for disaster. The Labour Party's solutions to the crisis were pretty predictable. They pushed taxes up. At one stage, the marginal rate of tax was 98%. Think about it. You want to work an extra hour, you earn 10 quid, and you have to hand £9.80 over to the government. It was a phenomenal disincentive to people to work hard or people to take the risk to invest to set up their own businesses. The result was that people didn't work harder. They worked shorter hours. They didn't invest to set up new businesses. Unemployment soared. The great election poster from 1979 said it all. Labour isn't working. And then a long line of people signing on to the dole. It simply wasn't working. The country was broken. And then Mrs. Thatcher came to power. Now, one charge laid against her by some of those commenting yesterday, is that she enjoyed a bonanza of revenues from North Sea oil, £300 billion, and according to the critics, she squandered it on tax cuts. Well, of course, the bonanza of revenues from the North Sea started under Labour, and it went on long after Thatcher. The critics say, how come Britain didn't set up a sovereign wealth fund like Norway, which has got billions of pounds in its sovereign wealth fund? They might as well have mentioned the Abu Dhabi Wealth Fund, for that is the fair comparator. In the 1980s, the population of Norway was less than 5 million. The country hadn't been bankrupt in 1976. It didn't have its national finances in a state of disrepair come 1979. they were already pretty solid. They had almost full employment. They had a thriving fishing industry, helped by not being restricted by the EU. They had many people working in fishing, but in a whole range of other industries, in tourism, in commerce. Unemployment was almost nothing. The government finances were already in a good state. And then Norway enjoyed huge revenues from North Sea oil, in the same way that Britain did, but it had nothing to spend it on. So it was able to create a sovereign wealth fund, in the same way Abu Dhabi found itself in a pretty similar situation. Britain was rather different. We had 60 million people, so those oil revenues were spread rather more thinly. Moreover, the nation's finances were in an appalling state. One of the things that Mrs. Thatcher realised was that, and something politicians seem to have forgotten, is the state doesn't have its own money. When the state says it's going to spend an extra $75 million on prostate cancer or whatever pledge Mrs. May has made today, it's not the government's money, it's your money, it's my money, it's taxpayers' money. That money either comes from the government taking it from us in tax, or it is borrowed. That creates a burden for the future. Not only must we service the debt, and today we spend £45 billion a year servicing our national debt. That's more than we spend on defence. But in one day, we may have to repay it as well. So you're just landing future generations with a liability. It's never the government's money, it's always your money. The other thing Mrs. Thatcher realised was that if you have tax at a certain rate, it is a disincentive to work and it's a disincentive to pay taxes. So she slashed tax rates. The argument put by some of my critics yesterday is that the money that came in from the North Sea was used to give tax breaks to the rich. It's not true. The money that came in from the North Sea was spent on health, education, defence, transport, all the normal things. The government was running a huge deficit, and by having that windfall from the North Sea, but also by selling off redundant state assets, the process of privatisation, Mrs. Thatcher was able to spend more on health, education, transport, all those other good things. She was able to do that without raising taxation and without increasing the government debt at the alarming rates we've seen ever since. In other words, we have fiscal prudence. The amount received from income tax, that is the amount that individuals paid, actually went up, even though tax rates went down. That's because of something called the Laffer curve. Laffer curve is named after a famous economist, and he noted that if you increase the tax rates beyond a certain point, your net receipts from tax go down. Mrs. Thatcher reduced tax rates and income tax receipts actually went up. That was a good thing because that meant there was more money to spend on health, education, transport, etc., etc., without straining the nation's finances in the way that Dennis Healey, as the Labour Chancellor, had done so disastrously in the previous administration, causing the country to go to the IMF for a bailout. So in those respects, Margaret Thatcher used the oil money wisely, but she also increased the tax take from both income tax and from corporation tax by freeing up entrepreneurs to invest in creating new businesses. It was the generation, the decade of entrepreneurship. In those respects, we owe this country owes Margaret Thatcher an enormous gratitude. She got the nation's finances back on track. She provided stability. No longer were we seen as a country likely to go bankrupt, but we were seen as a prosperous nation. She did that in part thanks to North Sea oil, but also by increasing the amount raised from taxation from corporations and from individuals, and she did that by cutting tax rates. But she did so much more. She reformed the labour laws. In the 1970s, it wasn't just that people at Company A would go on strike. People at Company A would go on strike and the strikers would close down its suppliers. It was called secondary picketing. They would bring the whole system to gridlock. Therefore, strike days affected not only those companies directly affected, but all sorts of other companies as well. And that made Britain uninvestable. Often it was very small groups within unions who agitated for strike action. It wasn't what most workers wanted, and certainly they didn't believe in secondary picketing. That was all changed, and as a result, the number of strike days in Britain fell dramatically during the 1980s. And you know what? That was good news, because it meant that more jobs were created. Employment in this country rose dramatically during Mrs. Thatcher's period in power. More people had jobs, and that's because it was possible to invest in this country. The critics of Margaret Thatcher lambasted her on this website yesterday for things like her rationalisation of the British coal industry. She did indeed rationalise the British coal industry. Between 1979 and the day she left office, output in British coal remained more or less static. It was down by 2 or 3%. The number of people employed in the industry fell by two-thirds. That was because, until 1979, we knew that many of our older pits were completely uneconomic. The cheapest coal in Britain was produced at a cost of £24 a tonne. The most expensive was at something like £124 a tonne. Clearly, large numbers of old, generally small pits were uneconomic. They were losing money, and because the government owns the National Coal Board, they were losing money for the taxpayer. People in profitable companies with real sustainable jobs were being taxed to subsidise the coal industry. That was clearly wrong. Now, my critics, and the critics of Margaret Thatcher yesterday, say, but we want the government to do this. It's quite right. If the government employs people to do jobs which are maybe losing money for the taxpayer, then those people will have wages, they'll go and spend it in the community, it makes the country richer. This is the economics of madness. It's exactly what Venezuela has tried as an economic experiment, and it doesn't work. Closer to home for me, it's the Greek economic model. Greece has a bloated public sector, a massive public sector. Per head of population, it employs a multiple of what we do in this country. And you know what? It hasn't worked out so well for the Greeks, has it? It's caused government debt to balloon. It ballooned to the point where no one was prepared to lend it any more money. Greece had gone down the same path as Labour did in the 1970s. Eventually, they ran out of other people's money. And a key core reason for that is this belief that it is worth paying people to do unproductive jobs, jobs which will never generate a return for the taxpayer, jobs which are pointless, paying them to do it and paying them large salaries just to keep down unemployment. Well, it doesn't keep down unemployment because it results in a huge tax burden for the productive part of the economy, and therefore it destroys jobs in the productive part of the economy because people say, and companies say, why will we do business here and pay your high taxes? Let's go and do business overseas. Margaret Thatcher reversed that. We didn't impact on coal output, but we ended up with an industry that was competitive. And that was replicated across the state-owned industries. British Steel, British Leyland, names now long gone. Those businesses were losing vast amounts of money for the taxpayer. British Rail, losing vast amounts of money for the taxpayer, paying people to do jobs that were just not needed. Margaret Thatcher took on the unions and won. And that helps Britain. There was so much more that Margaret Thatcher did. She gave people the right to buy their council houses. People who could never have dreamt of getting on the property owning ladder suddenly had a house which they owned, which they then were incentivized to look after and maintain. It gave those people an opportunity. Hitherto, home ownership was preserved for the middle classes. Margaret Thatcher, being a meritocrat, opened it up to so many more people. By the time Margaret Thatcher left office, the British economy was booming. We were a successful economy. People can barely remember that just 10 years previously, we had been the sick man of Europe. Government finances were in a healthy state. We were no longer burdening either current taxpayers or future taxpayers with an enormous burden. People from overseas wanted to invest in Britain. They wanted to set up businesses here. They helped create jobs here. That was a great achievement. Margaret Thatcher may have had one or two faults. I personally hold against her the fact that she failed to tackle Robert Mugabe over his actions in Matabeleland in 1982. She turned a blind eye. For that, I would condemn her. She was perhaps a little bit too enthusiastic about the European Union in her early years, although to her credit, she admitted the error of her ways and became a diehard Eurosceptic, certainly after she left office. She wasn't perfect. She made mistakes. But be under no mistake, Margaret Thatcher saved Britain. Britain in the 1970s was in an appalling mess. Unemployment was going through the roof. No new jobs were being created. The government's finances were in a total mess. Margaret Thatcher changed all of that. She didn't squander the proceeds from North Sea oil, as our critics allege. The money from North Sea oil was used to invest in health, education, transport. For me, that's a good thing. The government has a windfall. It provides better services for the public. Surely you should welcome that too. I suspect that many of Margaret Thatcher's critics just can't remember her achievements of the 80s, let alone the disaster she inherited in 1979. They have no comprehension of that. They should learn from that, because if you don't learn from history, then you're destined to repeat the mistakes. The younger generation, who believe that Jeremy Corbyn's policies of spending money which the government doesn't have, racking up vast debts, believing in the money tree, they believe that's the answer. If they look back to the 1970s, they'll see that that is not the answer. That is a recipe for disaster. We should all be eternally grateful to Margaret Thatcher for saving Britain in 1979. It was just over 5 years ago that she died. I remember going to her funeral in London. I wasn't actually invited to the ceremony in St. Paul's, but like tens of thousands of other people, I lined the streets and paid my respects, together with my friend Lucien Myers. It struck me that whilst the chattering classes, the metropolitan elite, sneered at Mrs. Thatcher, people on the streets were generally just ordinary, decent people. They were people who bought their council house. There were people who felt the ability to set up their own business. There were people who gained employment in the 1980s, having suffered unemployment in the 70s. There were people who respected the improvement in public services that we saw under Mrs. Thatcher. They can remember those times. They respect Thatcher and they're determined not to go back to the bad old days of the 1970s. The critics of Mrs. Thatcher, who I suspect are young, should learn from history because we don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past. They should realise what fantastic news Mrs. Thatcher was for Britain.